You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The past week has featured some pretty major political upheaval on the left. We've seen a change in Labour Party leaders, and the Greens are being described by a number of political commentators as being in a state of chaos, which comes after two MPs resigned in protest of Matiria Ture's benefit and electoral fraud in the past. The debate has divided many voters, with some loyally standing behind Ture and others saying they will no longer be voting for the Greens. I wondered this morning, though, if we'd all some major issues highlighted by this debate. So I talked to two smart ladies about the subject, firstly speaking to Bronwyn Haywood from the University of Canterbury.
It's a very serious situation for them. They've had a very public split over the deep moral questions, both about paying and whether and your role as a leader, and also these questions around electoral fraud. And the trouble is that that's got in the way of the bigger message that the Greens were trying to talk about, because they are actually trying to talk about an issue that is really important, which is the issue around the Ministry for Social Development being the most aggressive of the prosecuting agencies in New Zealand at the moment after corrections. And that has a particular effect for women and for Māori, because what we're seeing in the last 3 to 5 years is a significant rise in prosecutions for very minor offences under MSD. They will chase you down for $1,000, whereas ACC doesn't start until $20,000 for a fine. And also, you are three times more likely to be arrested and sent to jail for a fraud offence under as a beneficiary than you are if you're a tax evader, and there's a huge financial difference in the amounts of money involved. So they're talking about very serious issues around fairness, or wanting to talk about fairness of our justice system, but instead it's become this debate about Matiria and was she really poor and did she really do the right thing, and it's become very personalised, and that is difficult for them.
Yeah, everyone is talking about Matiria and whether she's fit to be a leader, whether her staying on is bringing the party down, which almost seems to, seems to be missing the point in a way.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, she has become the point, so this is a problem. They have walked into this situation. On the other hand, I was just thinking about it today, and because actually, personally, I don't think she went about it with the right strategy. And I think if she could have stepped down for somebody like Marama Davidson, who's third on the list, and taken the heat off herself but still kept the issue going, it would have worked better for them. But they can't do that because their constitution doesn't allow for an easy replacement unless they have an election or they've got someone second in the AGM, and she was elected unopposed, so they're in a difficult situation there.
Oh, so she can't actually step down?
No, so this is basically the most that they can do to take the heat off her, is for her to actually step back and admit or accept that she won't take ministerial or decision-making roles later in government, and then tough it out till the election. So the only other thing, well, that they could do is have a special vote, but that will be an enormous drama that they won't want. So they're just going to have to tough it out. And I was thinking, this really reminds me of the British election at the moment, because this kind of unanimous condemning of a politician was exactly what it felt like about Corbyn, to be honest. And a lot of commentators are saying, how could he be such a hopeless strategist? He's got a terrible media presence. He's the wrong person. And for him, his charm effect was to work with both a very strong mobilisation on the ground and also the grime and the conversations that he had on social media where he was listening. The story wasn't about him. He managed to flip it around so he was listening to people, a bit like Nihirangi Forbes did last night on her Radio New Zealand interview, where you're actually just in conversation and people are talking. He was able to turn the grassroots conversations around, even while the commentators were mass condemning him. So if the Greens could do something like that and they can hold their line, they might be able to shore back, not to the very high rates we've seen in the polls, but at least to something stronger than some of their harshest critics expect.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of almost the, interestingly, the result of this dialogue has been this real divide in people's perspectives on the subject. So people were either really supportive of her and the party, but others are blaming the situation for putting them off from voting for the Greens entirely. And so do you think that the media condemning Matidia as a leader has kind of created this divide in voter discussions around the subject?
Not so much the media. I think the issue is very divided. We know whenever we talk about fairness and money that people really harden up. And we also know that public attitudes to beneficiaries are really different to their attitudes to white-collar crime. And so the real issue is that we have been incredibly harsh in punishing poor Māori women compared to white-collar crime. And in a way, that's one of the problems. But there's a second really interesting, troubling issue, which is after the murder of Joe Cox in Britain, there's been a lot of soul-searching by the media and public figures about how we talk about women's leadership. And I was also just starting to get anxious about the way in which we are so casual in our vitriol against women leaders at the moment. You know, everyone is starting to use this this sort of language of hyperbole. You know, she's ripping off the benefit system. Actually, come on. You know, she was a student at 23. I don't condone it. I think it was really stupid. I don't think it's an analogy that's really perfect for the kind of cases she's trying to present. But it does reflect about us, and I think then families are starting to think about themselves, and this is where it becomes very divided. And I'm not sure about you, but lots of people I know are on really polar extremes of the debate in how they feel about this. And somehow we've got to have a more grown-up conversation about our values and the way in which our legal system is driving people into a situation where they are trapped in poverty. And I think if the Greens could bring that debate round, that will really work for them. But right now, I think all they can do is just circle the wagons and hold into the position that they're in and hope that some of this blows over.
I also spoke to Victoria University political lecturer Claire Timperley about how the Matidia debate has highlighted class issues within New Zealand's parliamentary representation.
Well, it just seems to me that a lot of the conversation that we've been having has been either focused on kind of the politics of what's happening in the Green Party or kind of the leadership challenges, but that something that had been missing from the conversation had been the very issue itself of beneficiary fraud and what that reveals to us about our welfare state and our welfare system, but also kind of the questions of class that emerge from those particular issues.
So do you believe there's a double standard with the way in which Ture has been treated?
Well, I'm not sure that I'd want to get into that too much. My main point that I was trying to make in the article is that the experiences that Ture has faced in her life are not experiences that many of our MPs have had to face, and that our politics would be much more representative if we had more MPs with experiences like this.
Right. But I mean, I guess because, you know, with both the benefit fraud admission as well as the electoral fraud admission, I think a lot of these things are, I mean, as you mentioned in the article, you know, if we looked back at every single MP, surely some of them would also have committed such things as electoral fraud. But that hasn't been done, and that's not going to be done. It's kind of, she's been put to such a high level of scrutiny that seems to distract from the main purpose of the revelation in the first place, it seems.
Well, yeah, and it's sort of part of the point she was trying to make when she first announced that she had committed benefit fraud, was that beneficiaries face a higher level of scrutiny than the average New Zealand citizen. And to some degree, it seems that this has sort of played out in the kind of ongoing saga, and that she, as a result of this admission of beneficiary fraud, has been the subject of greater scrutiny in terms of other past transgressions, including electoral fraud. So I haven't looked in any detail myself at whether other MPs may have participated in electoral fraud, but given that we know that, for example, many students will move to a place other than where their parents live in order to study at university, and many of them don't change their addresses when an election comes around. And in many cases that might just be because it's particularly inconvenient or difficult to do so, but for some of them they may also say, well, you know, in the case of Victoria University, I've moved to Wellington, I live in Wellington Central, when I cast my electorate vote, I will be... It is very likely that a left-wing candidate is going to win. Therefore, maybe I should still cast my vote where my parents live, where maybe there is more of a swing vote, that my vote might make more of a difference in that situation. So I think that there are lots of reasons to kind of have... I'm not saying that you should ignore the fact that there is electoral fraud happening, but the fact that this has been raised is something that is particularly troubling for Today, when we haven't looked at other MPs to see whether or not this is an issue for any other MPs. I think this is all connected to the class issue in particular.
Definitely. I mean, also, you know, not only with the way that she's been dissected in the media, but also in conversations that I've had with people, they seem hugely divided on this as well. You know, for some it's the benefit fraud that was the thing that pushed them away from voting for the Green Party this year. For others it's the electoral fraud, and they're saying, you know, I'm changing my vote now. Is this all down to class as well, do you think?
Well, I think it does reveal for something that I think the media has talked about to some degree, that the Green Party and the hit has been sort of revealed, especially by the recent concerns raised by two of the MPs within the Green Party. It does reveal that there are two kind of key constituencies that the Green Party is trying to appeal to, one of which is people who are in lower socioeconomic classes, who kind of bear the brunt of many of the policies passed by the government in terms of kind of issues related to the welfare state. But then the other core constituency, which I hear a lot about, or there are lots of conversations in the media about, is they also appeal to kind of the middle class, relatively well off, quite well educated groups of people who I'm sort of talking in broad terms here and generalizations here, but who often haven't had to use the welfare system, for instance. And so for them, there is an issue in terms of they have a standard of principles that they want to apply, and that they think that the Green Party in particular is appealing to them because they seem like quite a principled party. And it seems to them that, well, if you're committing fraud, then you're not kind of upholding your own sense of principles, and therefore that's a problem for me when I think about who I'm going to cast my vote for. But they, as that kind of educated middle class, relatively kind of elite group of voters, hasn't had to face the issues of the kind of lower class voters who have had to use the benefit and have realized that the benefit doesn't actually cover your living costs, for instance. Yeah, so I think that this sort of does reveal an issue for the Greens in terms of who they're trying to appeal to in capturing the vote. So it might be that the people that you've spoken to who are voters are part of that more educated, I don't know, but are part of that more kind of young, urban, educated group of people who in some ways I would argue have almost kind of the luxury of making a principled decision.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I totally agree with that. I think from most of the conversations that I have had, it's people who have worked within the welfare system who've been firmly staying on her side versus the people who haven't experienced it, who've been far more critical of it. And so, I mean, I guess this kind of comes back to the point in your article about how it's actually so important to have people with a wide range in experiences and, you know, experiencing the experiences of a beneficiary is a very, very common experience for New Zealanders. Therefore, we need to have people who've experienced that system, who've had firsthand experience with that system, therefore working within Parliament.
Exactly right. And that, I mean, I think that I mentioned this in my article, but in New Zealand, we are incredibly lucky. We're a relatively small community. I kind of draw a contrast with the United States in terms of running for office. There are far fewer obstacles to running for office in New Zealand than they are in the United States or even in the UK. And so I think we're incredibly lucky in that we have more opportunities for good representation and more diverse representation, because we don't have kind of the same, especially monetary obstacles to running for office. But the way that this particular issue has been treated makes me very concerned, not only that because of the experiences that she's had, and I don't think it's incidental that it was more than 20 years ago and that she was not an MP at the time. I think that's actually quite an important part of the conversation too. But that if anyone who is currently on the benefit or has been on the benefit and has sort of been in that kind of grey space, either directly has defrauded the state or has kind of fudged things a little bit, would think twice now about whether or not they want to run for politics, because it seems to them that there's kind of this intense level of scrutiny and this condemnation for what seemed to me on the ground, and I personally have not been have been in the fortunate position of not having to be a welfare beneficiary, but those very, very difficult decisions that are being made, which are kind of on a very basic level of what money do I have to live? Do I have enough from week to week to pay my rent? Do I have enough money to feed myself or my dependents? And so, yeah, I'm very concerned that this would be a signal to those people who have had experiences like Materia Ture that they are not welcome in our halls of power, that they should not be running for office, and that they need to rely on someone else to represent their views who may not have had those experiences which would inform them in terms of crafting government policy and legislation.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much, you know, that's the crux of this whole thing, and that so much of the discussion has just been swept away into this whole area of Greens being in crisis / Materia Ture not fit for the job, when actually she's almost more fit for the job in a way.
I mean, it's quite nuanced insofar as she's not resigned from Parliament. She has just said that she wouldn't hold a ministerial position if the Greens were able to get into government. But even then, I think that is sort of problematic to say, well, we would allow you to be in the legislature, but we know that being in the legislature is a very different kind of power than having a ministerial position and being able to actually shape policy in a much more complete and comprehensive way. So it's particularly difficult in a way, because there is that kind of nuance to being in government versus being in the legislature, and the different kind of role that a minister plays to a general MP.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.